on the 1 yard line with their backs against the wall.
This ain't a game to me. If you think it's a game, get the fuck off of this bus.
Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome back to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Carter.
I'm your host, Cody Vanciulello.
Cody, it was a workmanlike performance by the Clones on Wednesday. The Clones win 82-59, going away. I'm not going to lie to you, I was a little bit scared when Utah took the lead a little bit earlier in the game. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, Utah came out like they were able to hit some shots. I mean, they had that first half was a tale of two long runs, because when Iowa State took, the first lead, Utah proceeded to go on a 15-2 run that was led by one of the Madsen brothers. I believe it was Gabe Madsen, because he was probably the best performer for Utah against Iowa State that Tuesday at Hilton Coliseum. So Iowa State had to deal with a flurry from Utah then. And it was, like I said, 52 run. Gabe Madsen, he was the leading scorer for the Utes with 20 points. He shot 4-14 from three. But that first half, it felt like he could just get about anything he wanted to. And they got some production as well from Mira Little off the bench. Gave him 2-3 shooting from the perimeter, 13 points. But Iowa State, they took a punch from Utah, and that was their best punch, which is to be expected from every team. But Iowa State was able to respond to that run with a run of their own. At one point, the Iowa State Twitter even put out that they were on a 19-1 run. So that first half was just about two prolonged runs. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, Iowa State was able to get a double-digit advantage. The half, they ended with a 13-point advantage. And it got close early in the second half, but Iowa State was just ultimately able to pull away. So, yeah. I mean, if you're going to be the big dogs of the conference, you're going to get everybody's best punch. So, great response by Iowa State. Obviously, there's some things to work on. Like, for example, rebounding. Utah brought a lot of physicality. They brought more than what I expected. But Iowa State was able to win in different ways. This time around, we forced Utah into 18 turnovers, which is where Iowa State thrives.
Yeah. They thrived in that, and that was one of the main reasons why they won the game, and they pulled away. So anytime you force turnovers, it's easier to pull away, get in the game. And, I mean, a lot of the shots that Utah took, they just weren't falling. Like, some of those were good shot selections, and they just weren't falling that day. And also, just like you said, 19 turnovers that we forced. Like, that truly helps when you're trying to pull away from a pesky opponent like Utah was.
For sure. Yeah, I have the stats here. Iowa State forced 18 turnovers, like I mentioned earlier. They were able to get 25 points off of turnovers, which were huge. So getting that transition offense is what Iowa State likes to run. They want to run transition, run quick offense, get buckets, like get into the paint quick and dominate in there. And, I mean, they did ultimately win the paint battle. They won that 40-30. Rebounding looked a little better in the second half, but that first half was definitely not the greatest. They were just being out-physicaled by the big men from Utah. The offensive rebounding numbers are 16-13 in favor of Utah, but, I mean, Iowa State was able to adjust after halftime, really got a little more physical with Utah, and they limited those second chance points that Utah was driving off of in the first half to kind of stay in the game.
Yeah, man. I know TJ got up in them at halftime. Like, hey, we got to be more physical. So, like, I know he got up in that team, and something changed in the second half. I'm like, TJ must have ripped them a new one. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna go also look at the box score. Joshua Jefferson once again came to play, man. He had 7 rebounds, 5 of 10, 1 of 1 from 3. Also, he hit all of his free throws, and definitely was a big contributor in the second half.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Joshua Jefferson, like, he started out slow. He was able to get too many buckets to fall in the paint, wasn't able to find good looks. Just that first half was really slow for him. But, I mean, that second half obviously did much better. And seeing a big man being able to hit all of their free throws is a great sign to see, because that was one of the things that kind of held back the team a little bit the last couple of years when our bigs were Rob Jones, Trey King, and Hassan Ward. And I mean, they were bad big men, but those free throws, like, that was something that was criticized a little bit from the men's team the last couple of years, was just guys not being able to hit the free throws. And now that we see a bigger player like Joshua Jefferson hitting their free throws, it's a great sign to see. And speaking of free throws, Taman Lipsey, he was living at the free throw line. He had 14 total attempts, converted on 11 of them to add to his probably his best game of the year. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals.
I mean, yeah, Cody, any time that you can basically foul out, basically put 3 of their big men in foul trouble, you know you're doing something right. That was the craziest thing for me. It's like, man, they got all, I'm like, dang, all of their big guys are in foul trouble right there. So that's just elite point guard play from Taman Lipsey right there, man. So I like where he's at. And of course, Cujo steps up again, man, with 23 points. Mr. Six Man, that's what I call him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, yeah, he's a starter, like, off the bench. Like they said on, I believe, commentary, is like, he's instant offense. Like, as soon as you put him in, he'll get you, like, a few quick buckets, and you get your offense going. And it felt like there were points of time where Curtis Jones just wouldn't miss.
Yeah, man, it seems like he's just automatic. Sort of like I'll say 2015, 2016 Steph Curry effect. Basically, he can pull up from anywhere, and you just are very confident that he's going to make it. So, like, for me, I think that, you know, we can put a bow on that preview, or not that preview, the reaction on that. And let's really get into this Texas Tech game. So, on that same night, Texas Tech came back against BYU. So we are on the road tomorrow against Texas Tech, and Iowa State is currently a 1.5-point favorite going into that game.
Okay, I'm thinking with this game, it's tough. It's tough to play in Lubbock. It's never an easy game when it comes to playing in Lubbock. Yeah, that 1.5-point favorite. I think the sports bookmakers, like Vegas, really loves Texas Tech at home. And I mean, United Supermarkets Arena, never an easy place to play. Mm-hmm. Obviously able to come back at BYU, I will say. But the one thing that is kind of surprising is I look, they actually lost to UCF at home.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they barely lost. I mean, it took UCF shooting 44% from 3 to beat Texas Tech. They only won by 4. Meanwhile, Texas Tech only shot 18.8% from 3. So it looks like the way UCF was able to beat Texas Tech was just being able to hit their threes and hitting their shots. They were 52% from the field. And that's kind of the thing that for Iowa State that you want to see is you got to have your guys be able to hit their shots. Obviously, put up good shots, get those quality shots, and be able to hit them. That's going to be the one thing that needs to be seen from Iowa State in order to win. But Texas Tech, obviously, is no slouch either. They took a then-ranked Texas A&M down to the wire. And, I mean, that 5-point loss to A&M is looking a little better because A&M looks like one of the better teams in the SEC.
Yeah, the SEC is taking the case for being the best basketball conference in the nation from the Big 12. So for me, I'd like to, to see Tech, make it. I think it's going to be a track meet, man, because if you look at their defensive numbers are way down. Usually these are far and away from the Chris Beard teams that used to D you up. Now Tech wants to outscore you. So I think for us, if we're on, we just got to play our type of ball. As you know, Iowa State can play any type of style. So if it has to be a run and gun, we can run and gun. So really, with us, just got to, on certain possessions and being able to hit certain shots at crucial moments. And I think that, we can definitely win this game. Are there certain matchups that you're looking forward to seeing, or matchups that you think that we could expose?
I'm taking a look. So right now, what I'm seeing is just kind of taking a look at the top score. Like the main players for Texas Tech that you have to kind of look out for are Chance McMillan. He usually puts about 32 minutes a game. You've also got Darian Williams, who is the team's leading scorer and rebounder. You also have Elijah Hawkins, who can distribute the ball well and also be able to pickpocket you, because Elijah Hawkins is the leading assist player for Texas Tech and also leads the team steals, about 2 steals a game. And then defensively, you're going to get some size, because if the fans may be familiar with the name Federico Federico, if you know that name, he was a part of that Pitt squad that eliminated Iowa State in TJ's second year at Iowa State. So he's over at Texas Tech now. So that'll be a name familiar. But I mean, like I said, if we were able to not only be able to run the track meet with Texas Tech if need be, we can also get Joshua Jefferson against Federico Federico, I'll have to see how that matchup goes. That's going to be the one matchup, if I'm assuming that matchup is correct. I'm not sure who Deshaun Jackson will be matched on, but if the matchup is Federico Federico and Joshua Jefferson, that's a fun matchup to look out for.
That's going to be a battle down the paint right there, man. I'm looking forward to seeing that matchup. And then another thing I see, I'm also on their page as well. One of the keys to this game, for me at least, is going to be rebounding. On the team stats page so far this year, they're tied for 125th, averaging 37.4 rebounds per game total. So I think that this is going to be a game where we're going to have to assert our dominance in the paint. Like the shot, like the bigs are going to have to put in work, man. Those second chance points, offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding, boxing out. So that's going to be key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think those rebounding numbers, like those second chance points, especially if you're playing very close game, those second chance points will be very crucial. I would expect another solid performance from Branson Chatfield, who has averaged about two offensive rebounds a game, and Iowa State is like in the middle of the pack when it comes to offensive rebounds, with about 10 offensive rebounds a game. So, I mean, you do the math there, 10 offensive rebounds from the team, that's at least 20 points that you could potentially earn for your squad. So we can really not only finish defensive possessions by defensive rebounding, but if we can out-physical Texas Tech and get those second chance points, I think Iowa State could be able to squeak out a close win against Texas Tech. But I expect Texas Tech to really push Iowa State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, man. Do you have any score predictions, or what do you think?
This one is gonna likely. I would expect this one to maybe go towards season 90s. I might see Iowa State crack like 92-88. That probably be somewhere in that ballpark. But both teams usually average about 86 points a game, so maybe I'll lower it a little bit, maybe like 89-85.
My score prediction, I think we're going to win 93-86.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of fireworks will be going on in United Supermarkets Arena down in Lubbock. So that's pretty much your Iowa State preview for Texas Tech. And then after that, obviously, we'll get Kansas next Wednesday. And then they'll be at West Virginia next Saturday. We'll talk about that when we get there. But that's just the stretch you have to look out for. This is a very important stretch for Iowa State to really determine if they truly belong with the top of the Big 12. Because right now, the race for the Big 12 is starting out to be like a consensus has come to say that it's a 2-horse race between Iowa State and Houston, but Arizona is making a run at the Big 12. But you always have to look out for Kansas, and maybe even West Virginia could surprise everybody. But
yeah,
right now it's projected that Iowa State and Houston are the two leading horses in the Big 12 race.
Yeah, just a great analysis by you there. Yeah, I think the KU game, this game, and the West Virginia game, these next These next three games are going to tell us a lot about this team, man. If we come out this with unblemished or with one loss, I feel really, really good about these next few games that we got. So it's going to be a very, very interesting journey to see where this ISU team ends up. So one thing I did want to talk about, or actually, before we get to football, let's talk about the women's team. The women's team with a resilient win in Tempe. Well, that was on Wednesday as well, right?
The Utah game at Hilton was on Tuesday. Then the next day it was the ladies.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned the ladies.
Yes.
What a performance from Ariana Jackson. She had probably her best game of the season. Like, especially just, I think she hit her season high of, like, what was it, 20 points, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Or no, 16. Yeah, the ladies won that game in Tempe against the Sun Devils, 90-83. This was, like, at one point, Iowa State was up by 20, but Arizona State was just, they kept hanging around, and I mean, they were hitting their shots, and they made this a real game. And then it was just a game of Iowa State getting out to a big lead, but Arizona State continued to fight, and they did not go down until the very end. So, I mean, tough, gutty win on the road. It's never easy to hold big leads on the road because, you know, as soon as a couple buckets start falling for the home team, the crowd gets into it, the players are feeling it, and they feel that pride of wanting to protect home floor. So, great win for the ladies, and they'll get prepared to play Arizona tomorrow, which will be right after the men's game. The men's game does start as tip off at 1 o'clock local time, and then it will tip off, the ladies will tip off at 3 p.m. local time. But I want to actually go into the stats about the women's game. You had 5 players hit double-digit figures in points. Audie Crooks leads the team with 20 points. She also contributed a couple of rebounds, an assist, and a steal with 2 blocks. Then you also had, obviously mentioned earlier, Ariana Jackson. She was 66% from 3, contributing 4 free throws for 16 points. Emily Ryan had herself another pretty nice game, 16 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists. Both Ariana Jackson and Emily Ryan were perfect from the stripe. Addie Brown, even though this was kind of a down game for her, still was able to contribute 14 points and almost had a double-double with 9 rebounds, a couple assists, and a steal. And then off the bench, Reagan Wilson had kind of a breakout performance. She contributed 10 points off the bench. She went 4-for-4 from the free throw line and also hit 2 three-pointers. Great sign for Reagan Wilson, a great sign for the team because they now know that we have a pretty reliable substitute at point guard, so it'll be great to for Emily Ryan, given that Emily Ryan is on a limited minutes basis as a result of, obviously, her health issues that were discussed in the offseason, and she opened up about in the offseason. Emily Ryan will still be on that minutes restriction until she gets the clearance to play a full 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Reagan Wilson, man, 10 points in 9 minutes. It seems like she could be a spark plug for the Cyclones. Probably something that the Cyclones have been looking to spark them in their season. So far, I mean, they're right now, they're still within striking distance. They're only 2 games away. They're still there. I see that there's a bunch of teams in the women's side of the Big 12 that are 4-0. Or that there's K-State and TCU at 4-0. Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and Baylor, Utah are 3-1, and Iowa State is tied with Colorado. So it's Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State. So the conference is still within striking distance for them. It's still early.
Yeah. I think just the main thing now, like, it's good to see. Still have a lot to work on, especially in the defensive end. Just got to be able to close out these games. But, I mean, you're in conference play. You would like to get wins any way possible. Obviously, you still want to look good in doing it. So it's good for them to win that game, even with the defense. So I'm just hope. I mean, we did see a glimpse of some of the defense. I mean, against Arizona State, there were a couple possessions. I mean, turnovers were about even, but we got a couple of turnovers in pretty crucial moments to get momentum. So just if we're able to really take care of the ball, pressure the ball well, force teams into tough shots, I think the women can, like, hopefully this is the start of them turning around, because after this, they'll stay in the state of Arizona to take on the Wildcats, and then they'll take on Texas Tech at home. They'll come back home for a home game against Texas Tech. That'll be the day before Kansas, and then they do travel at West Virginia the day after the men travel to West Virginia, so both basketball teams will be in Morgantown that weekend before school starts. So hopefully if Iowa State is able to get out with these next three games with a 2-1, maybe even pull off a road upset. I don't know. With how chaotic the conference could be, maybe the ladies could find a way to cause some chaos and win at West Virginia. But yeah, maybe that game could start something, but still a long season to go.
Definitely. It's a long season to go. Like you said, Cody, with all the shameless plugs, make sure Clemson fans when would that doubleheader be? What day is that doubleheader?
West Virginia?
Yeah. Because I know you said the men and women play at home.
No. Both the men's team and the women's teams play at Morgantown one day after another. So it'll be the men's team that plays on Saturday the 18th, and the ladies play the following day.
Sunday, okay.
So that'll just be a kind of a Riot Bowl doubleheader type of weekend.
Yeah, make sure to, Clemson fans, make sure to tune in Saturday and Sunday. Take a break from Super Wildcard Weekend. Go ahead, share on your clones, and yeah. Let's talk about this playoff game, man. That was a very, very good game yesterday. I went over to my friend's house. We had some pizza, typical game day food. But, man, it was a very, very rough game. Notre Dame pulled it out in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first half was very tough to watch. I mean, it was, the first half score was 10-3 in favor of Penn State, and the third quarter only had one touchdown that was scored by Notre Dame, and it was tied 10-10. But the fourth quarter is where all the fireworks really came in for this Orange Bowl. You start with a Jeremiah Love touchdown 2 yards out, then you get Nick Singleton scoring back-to-back touchdowns on the ground from 7 yards out to put the Nittany Lions up 7 points. Then you had Jaden Greathouse with a beautiful pass from Riley Leonard to tie the game up. And then Mitch Jeter comes on after Notre Dame picks off Drew Aller in Penn State territory to kick a 41-yard field goal and win the Capital One Orange Bowl for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And they will take on the winner of Ohio State and Texas, which will be playing in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. That is going to be taking place tonight, I believe, at 6:30 on ESPN. So with Notre Dame, they have a really good shot at winning their first national title since 1988. And I think Notre Dame, they've finally been able to really kind of break through the perceived glass ceiling, not being able to get into big, really, to the championship. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was just a Notre Dame thing where they just couldn't get over the hump in big games. But then I remember their former coach, Brian Kelly, even back at Cincinnati, they never really could win big games at all. Or every time they were in a big game, they always got embarrassed in big games. And then, you know, once the players choose Marcus Freeman, like, yeah, in his first year he struggled, but that's the struggles of a first-year coach. Went 8-4. Second year they got better, and then now this year they pop off. Obviously had an embarrassing loss in Northern Illinois, but they've put that in the rearview mirror. So now they're playing together as a team. That defense is great, great run game, and with Riley Leonard doing just enough at quarterback, it should be interesting to see who they face in this matchup. Ohio State, Texas, I'm really excited about this one. But, like, back to Notre Dame real quick. Just for Notre Dame, I've heard a lot that, like, this team is a lot more likable. And I think it's just because of the personality and the personality that Marcus Freeman has, and how laid back he is, and how he has the respect of his players. So I think that those are my thoughts on Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, now, unfortunately for the other side of Penn State, it's another case of big game James Franklin strikes again. Now, I did watch a video talking about, what was it, every big James Franklin choke in a big game. I saw at one point the record was like 1-14. And I think that was prior to the Big Ten championship. But now I think that puts what? Like, James Franklin's now what? 1-16 against like top five teams? Because I believe Notre Dame finished in the top five of like the non like college football bracket rankings, but like poll rankings or whatever. So it's the CFB rankings. So before seeding, obviously. But yeah, a Penn State, just James Franklin can just not get over the hump. You talk about like Notre Dame getting over the hump. Penn State cannot do it. James Franklin cannot do it. It doesn't matter who he has. I mean, he had Saquon Barkley, a generational college runner, and he still couldn't get over the hump. I mean, you talk about, what is it, that Rose Bowl against Sam Darnold, the USC Trojans, and they lost on a walk-off field goal. And just Penn State continues to trip over themselves in these big games. One thing that did, like, kind of shock me was, I saw that Penn State did not have a single pass completed to their wide receivers. Was that correct?
Yes, that's correct. They had no passes to their wide receivers. They were force feeding Tyler Warren. I get that Tyler Warren like is your like number one guy. And it's not like Penn State has horrible receivers. They have like viable receivers. They just decided not to throw it to them, and I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. That's just one of those things where it's like things like that are gonna like other reasons why I think that kind of contributes to why James Franklin has never been able to beat the allegations of choking in big games, and it follows him once again. So yeah, I don't know what Penn State will do, but obviously Notre Dame, they await their opponent from the Cotton Bowl Classic. So let's talk about that for a little bit. I want to get down to talk about Ohio State versus Texas, and kind of get our thoughts of what might happen in this game tonight.
Sure. You start off, and then I'll finish.
Yeah. So Ohio State comes in scorching hot, obviously. They beat the brakes off the Oregon Ducks. They won that Rose Bowl 41-21. So they're looking really good. I mean, we mentioned it one of the earlier episodes in the past couple of weeks that loss to Michigan, they took that personal, and they ever since then they found new life. There's a new fire under their ass, and they've been beating the crap out of their postseason opponents. Obviously, beating the crap out of Tennessee 42-17 at home, and then just mentioned Rose Bowl, they beat the brakes off of Oregon. They went duck hunting against them. So I'm curious to see how Ohio State will they continue that that Operation Scorched Earth that they were going on against a Texas team who had to scrap against the Arizona State Sun Devils in the Peach Bowl. So I wonder how Texas is feeling getting tested like that against Arizona State, against a red hot Ohio State Buckeye squad.
Yeah, that's going to be a thing. Like you said, Ohio State has been putting belt to ass to the last two opponents in the playoffs. So, I think this Ohio State team is a team that everybody thought that we were going to get in the regular season, but they sort of were underwhelming. But hey, now they are, you know, doing this when it matters. So it's going to be interesting to see just their O-line play versus Texas's D-line. Texas's D-line was spectacular last week when they escaped. So I really want to see what the psyche of Texas is going in. Like, they're going to have the crowd advantage, even though Ohio State fans travel well. But they are going to be playing in Dallas and Jerry World. So that should be an interesting crowd, mixture of crowd matchups. I want to see how their secondary is their weakness. So I expect Ohio State to expose that early and often throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I'm curious about is how's Ohio State's ranking going to do against Texas's defense? And really, on the flip side, how is Texas going to move the ball against this Ohio State defense? They were spectacular last week against Oregon.
Yeah, and Oregon, they had like, what was it, like Oregon is like one of the better offensive units in the country with like with a guy like Dylan Gabriel with the ball, and then you had like Tez Johnson and then Ferguson, the tight end. So, I mean, Oregon was completely shut down. They had their offense could not answer the call when it came to playing against that Ohio State defense. I mean, there are a couple of guys to note when it comes to that defensive squad. If I be able to look here on the defense, names like, what was it, Jack Sawyer, the defensive end, JT Tuiumalau, also a defensive end. Those are two guys in the trenches that Texas will have to be able to handle. And then you've got Jack Sawyer and Cody Simon at the second level, and then that secondary. Just, I don't know how Texas, I mean, do they have the answers to beat Ohio State and be able to limit the Ohio State offense, which is obviously led by Will Howard, a quarterback who's done a pretty nice job at distributing the ball and making plays when he needs to. I mean, he's also got a big supporting cast with Trayvon Henderson and Quinshon Judkins at the running back positions, and then the wide receiver room. You've got talent galore. You've got obviously the talented freshman Jeremiah Smith. You've also got Emeka Egbuka. And then Carnell Tate is a solid option to go to as well if need be. And then the offensive line for Ohio State is one of the best in the country.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing, Cody, because I remember back to that Game Watch series that we did way, way, way back before the season. It was the episode right after we did the schedule prediction with Eric. And we said that we had this exact same conversation, is if Will Howard doesn't do too much, this team can win the national championship. And we're seeing it right before our eyes. Will Howard is playing within himself. I mean, now they're on the doorstep of trying to win the national title for the first time in a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I truly believe that Ohio State is, like, I think them in Notre Dame, like, in that semifinal, I think those were the two teams with the best chances to win the national title. And we're halfway to having that national championship game, so here we'll see. But maybe that homish crowd for Texas could get them to the national championship. And, I mean, for Texas, their first year, they lead the Big 12. I mean, they were at this position around this time, like, the semifinals last year. Remember that Texas and Washington played in the Sugar Bowl semifinal, and Texas fell just short in that game. So I wonder if it's kind of exercises and demons for the Longhorns to get back to that national championship game.
Yeah, it's been a while for them. I mean, last time they were there in 2009. Last time they won was 2005, so mm-hmm. It's been two decades.
Yeah, but Texas fans will die on the hill that if Colt McCoy doesn't get injured, they win the national championship in 2009.
No, they wouldn't. Alabama would have beaten them still. But yeah. But what are you thinking of this game? Who wins?
I think Ohio State is more talented on the offensive end than Texas. And I think Ohio State's offense is a better matchup. I think Ohio State has superiority, and I think their defense will do enough to limit Quinn Ewers and Gunnar Helm. I think Texas this is not as great of a matchup for Texas because the trenches like are great, but I mean their secondary isn't great, and we did see a glimpse of that even in that game against Arizona State, where Cam Skadoo obviously had that passing touchdown that absolutely burned the secondary. And I mean, there were weaknesses that were shown. I mean, Texas had to go to overtime and almost lost the game. So I think being tested like that, it'll either challenge them to be better, or it might break them. And I think Ohio State is just too talented for this Texas team to quell enough for them to get past. So I'm going with Ohio State to advance. I believe I'm going to go like 42-38 for the final score of this game. And Ohio State will play Notre Dame in the national championship.
Yes, man, I like it. So for me, like I said before, it's going to come down to can Will Howard get the ball to his talented receivers and other weapons, backs, tight ends, I think he can. And really, for the answer for Texas is how is their secondary going to step up against these elite receivers? So with that being said, I think Ohio State is too powerful for Texas. I think Ohio State wins this one going away 31-20.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a all Midwest National Championship. Also, fun fact, if you look at every single level of college football, the Midwest has won at every level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if obviously include North Dakota State winning the FCS Championship. I don't remember who won the Division II, but I know
It was Ferris State.
Ferris State. Where are they located?
They're in Michigan.
Okay. Yeah, but another local university of mine, Grandview University, which is where one of my siblings went to, they won the NAIA National Championship, and their head coach, I think, just recently got called up to coach at Drake University.
Yeah, I saw that, and I have a local connection as well. North Central, which is located in Naperville, Illinois, which is south of me, and I grew up around that area, they won Division III. National Championship. I believe that's their third national title in a row. So they have been edging out Mountain Union, who used to run D3, and now North Central has made their mark. So congrats to North Central.
Yep. Yeah, with that said, some quick transfer portal news. We bolstered the defensive line. I mean, we got Tamatoa McDonough from Yale University. He's a 6'5", 253-pound defensive end. He collected 27 tackles for Yale last year, and he has 1 year of eligibility remaining. So that was a relatively quick turnaround for Iowa State to replace Tyler Onyendum after Tyler Onyendum committed to Texas A&M.
Yeah, they had to do something at that position. We're obviously still going to learn more about all the other young guys going through Wonder Camp, and we'll see who will probably have a chance to fight out that position once the spring game rolls around. And to end the show, we got to talk about the news that hit in the coaching world. Obviously, we know how incompetent the Chicago Bears are as a franchise, and there was a conversation that Matt Campbell decided to, this was a Chicago writer, Brad Biggs, who is usually on Chicago Sports Radio a lot, but it's from Chicago Tribune. It was a few days ago that they confirmed that the Bears were interviewing Matt Campbell for the head coaching position of the Bears. And I was like, dude, there's no way that he takes that Bears job, especially with just everything that has been going on at ISU and just like really just the autonomy that he has at this position, him being the greatest coach ever. Me as a Chicagoan, knowing how incompetent this franchise is, and just also with the vitriol that the city of Chicago and Iowa State have with one another.
Yeah, I can add the Chicago Bears to the list of rumored places Matt Campbell would be leaving Iowa State for. And I mean, some people like were actually feeling more concerned about this one than other ones because other coaching news. Kyle Kemp recently took the role of offense coordinator at Drake University. So great for Kyle Kemp. And I might even get to see Kyle Kemp some more because it'll be at Drake University. So great. But some people were saying there might be a little more ground with it. But I mean, here's the thing. I don't think Matt Campbell is not the person to really take on a job unless he truly believes in that job. And I mean, Ames is kind of where he's been and he kind of wants to be. I mean, he's built his legacy here and I think he wants to continue to do that. I mean, I don't know what. And plus, knowing the history of the Bears with the way head coaches are and knowing the history with the McCaskies, I don't think Matt Campbell will want to go to a place where he's kind of on a tighter leash because of the McCaskies.
Yeah, I was talking to my Bears fan friends, and they're like, dude, we don't want him. I was like, yeah, you better not ruin him like the Bulls did with Foyberg. And Tim Floyd. But that's just sour grapes. Me as an Iowa State fan and stuff. That's just what I wanted to talk about. Do you have any other things you wanted to add? before we go?
Yeah, real quick, I'm just going to plug some gymnastics. Tonight, they're going to be hosting their first home meet. This will be a try meet. So this will be Iowa State hosting the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Brown University Bears out of the Ivy League. This matchup against Iowa will not count against the in the Cy-Hawk series because the official Cy-Hawk matchup will take place on March 7th at in Iowa City. But I mean, if you're in the area, I mean, the gymnastics team had a not too bad showing against the defending national champion LSU Tigers. So that got them a lot of attention because LSU is a very notable, like, they're big in the college gymnastics world for obvious reasons. But it's an opportunity to get to check out gymnastics ladies. I mean, coming off the heels of the USA Olympics, obviously. So if you have that itch to check out some gymnastics and you're in the local Ames area, go ahead and support the ladies tonight. This will take place at 6:30 local time. It'll be streamed on ESPN Plus. And the theme for that gymnastics meet will be Color Cardinal. So wear your favorite Cardinal merch for that.
All right. Thank you for that shameless plug, Cody. And thank you guys for joining us on this episode of the Believe in MSA podcast with our Utah reaction and Texas Tech preview / football / everything at ISU. We can be found on X/ Twitter. I'm at SciTie Guy. Cody can be found at Matt Campbell Impersonator. We can be found on our five forms of social media: X, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. So for Tyler Carter
and for Cody Vancilello,
this is the Believe in Iowa State podcast. Roll clones, baby.
Let's go State.